You're listening to the Speech Uncensored podcast. Join us for weekly discussions diving into all the particulars of communication, voice, swallow, and cognition with tangible applications to the world of medical speech and language pathology. Resources and a discussion guide are in specially curated show notes that live on speechuncensored.com. My guests this week are Meredith Harold and Susie Turns, representing the Kansas Speech, Language, and Hearing Association. Our topic is all about state associations. And I feel like some people might be like, ooh, state associations, can't wait to tune in. This is going to be great, Leanne. But one of the things I'm passionate about is connecting practitioners with useful resources. And guess what? Your state association is a very useful resource. I wasn't aware of like half the things that Susie and Meredith brought to my attention. Like for example, the Kansas State Association was able to get the Interstate Compact passed in Kansas. So that means that with a Kansas SLP license at some point in the near future, I can also practice in Alabama, Kentucky, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Nebraska, North Carolina, Utah, West Virginia, and Wyoming. And there are 9 additional states with pending legislation. So this is something that your state association can or has already accomplished for you. I think that's a pretty big deal, you guys. So listen in for more delightful tidbits of how state associations are governed, how they're run, and how they benefit their members. My name is Leanne Porter. I'm your nerdy host, and I believe it's time to get your nourish and flourish on. Welcome, Meredith and Susie.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks.
All right. So I want to learn a little bit more about each of you before we dive into our topic today. So I'm going to start with you, Meredith. Tell me a little bit about who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Yeah. So I live in Kansas City with you, Leanne, and I'm owner of the Informed SLP, which is a website that connects clinicians with research for EBPs. I'm a former school-based SLP. I owned a private practice for a little bit of time. I worked at a university for a while, but basically I have experience in kind of all corners of our field. And ever since I graduated, I've been a member of our state association. And within the last few years, I've become a lot more involved with volunteering at the state association, and I'm currently the Kansas president.
Excellent. I don't know why this is going to sound crazy, but like I only just now became a member of the Kansas State Association like this year, like a few months ago.
Yeah, that's normal. And we're going to talk about why.
I can't remember what the impetus was for that, but I think, I remember now, which I think you're going to talk about as part of a list that you've created for our episode. Yeah. And I think I've lived in Kansas actually 3 years now. So it's only the second state association I've ever been a member of.
Yeah.
Okay, Susie, tell me a little bit more about you.
Okay, well, I'm from Wichita, born and raised in Wichita. Went to KU for undergraduate school, went to KU Med for an audiology degree. Currently, I'm the executive director of CASHA. That's our short name for the Kansas Speech Language Hearing Association. And I got into this role first really as a volunteer. I was just like Meredith, I was on the board, but I was the vice president of audiology. And at that time, we were going through some changes with management and kind of fell into this position. So I do this part-time. I'm the only paid person of CASHA. So everything falls on me from the accounting to website design and management. Every email that you get comes from me. If it says CASHA, it's really me. The Facebook and Instagram, which also we need to work on. But also part-time, I'm an audiologist still at Ascension Via Christi Hospital in Wichita, and I'm in charge of our hospital's newborn hearing screening program. So making sure that every baby gets their hearing tested, and if they don't pass that initial test, making sure they come back for follow-up. So I've learned a ton in this position, especially regarding legislation and lobbying. Didn't know much about that. Really had to review how a bill becomes a law. That did not stick from my senior year of high school government class. That all, you know, little Schoolhouse Rock video, I kind of memorized because I needed that. So that's always a good one to fall back on. Love this job and love being part of our state association and encouraging students and young people to join and clinicians. But it's been fun. Fun fact, Meredith, I was thinking, you know, you and I have known each other for almost 20 years.
We have.
And we're not even that old.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, those statements seem to be at odds with one another, but yes.
I know. I don't feel old. I don't feel like I could know you for 20 years. So yes, we went to school together at KU. Mm-hmm. So reunited through Kasha.
Yes.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. I have so many questions because, you know, we all or most of us are members of ASHA, our national association, and then every state has an association. So one might think, well, why do I need to be members of both? Which I'm sure is going to be a question that you guys get to. Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's dive in. Let's start at the very beginning. What is an association?
Yeah. So really, you know, if you think about it, associations are as old as the hills. I mean, America was really founded on associations, thinking back to our history of guilds, right? Like trade guilds and trade associations. But the IRS technically sums it up as, in general, an association is a group of persons banded together for a specific purpose. And I really think that state associations for speech language hearing are banded together for a specific purpose. And among all associations, I think there's like this sense of community coordination working toward a common goal. And that's really what an association is in general.
And the biggest reason why an SLP or audiologist would want to, or it would be in everybody's best interest to belong to both ASHA and the state association, is because there's a lot of things that can only happen locally. Just like we have local government where like certain things, you know, are only relevant within our state and can only be changed, controlled, prevented within our state. That applies to our field as well. You know, all of us have state licenses. We don't have national licenses. We have state licenses. So when something goes really, really wrong, a lot of times the things that can go wildly wrong are at the state level, not the national level. And even if ASHA wanted to help and tried to help at the state level, some things can only be done locally by local people.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. I'd forgotten that nice little fact about having state licenses rather than like a national or a federal one.
Uh-huh.
That's always been a joy. And I like how you pointed out that there are just really local things that happen. Like that makes me think of that really fascinating tax in Tennessee that SLPs, but not PTs or OTs, have to pay every year. It's like a $400 tax just to have a license to practice as an SLP. Have they done something about that lately? I feel like maybe their association did address it.
I don't know for sure. Susie, do you know? I haven't talked to anyone in Tennessee about that lately.
I don't know how that's going there.
But regardless, okay, That's the exact type of thing that, you know, happens mm-hmm. locally, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Another good example is in Texas, there was this huge move, and several other states actually, to get rid of a law of occupational licensure. The thought was that licensure and the process of getting a license was holding people back from working. And so in Texas, they actually proposed getting rid of SLP licenses altogether. And so the Texas Association really had to fight hard to say, no, we want to be licensed. This shows that we are qualified. This shows the public that yes, we're ethical, and yes, we have the qualifications to do this work. Otherwise, I mean, it's, you know, every man for himself. Yeah. Wild, wild west out there.
Right. Anybody could step into the role of an SLP and do absolutely anything. And we can imagine how disastrous that could be.
Yeah. At first I heard, like, when I thought, oh, no more licenses for SLPs, I was like, oh, great. Then that's fine. That's no problem. But then that means anybody, like people who have not gone to school to become an SLP, who have not taken courses, who have not done the work, the practicum, the clinical experience to become an SLP, can just sign up and be like, hey, I'm going to provide these services. And they don't know what they're doing because there's no regulation. Like that is a crucial part of making sure the qualified people who have done the work and the education and the experience to do this are the ones who are doing it.
Absolutely. How scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we've talked about what an association is, and let's talk about state associations for our field. Who owns it? How is it governed? What's the structure?
Yeah. I think that one thing that's really important for SLPs and audiologists to recognize that also plays into why so many people don't realize what state associations do is it's one of the only groups of people that's self-governed and where the money that you dump into it funnels right back to clinicians and what clinicians decide they want. So like, you know, Susie is the executive director, like she said, she's the only paid person in CASHA. Everything else is volunteer run. So when we collect clinicians' dues, what basically happens is there's a board of people who help decide what that money should go to, whether or not we need to pay for a lobbyist because we've got this hot mess going on at the state level, or whether or not we need to spend, you know, $2,000 to bring in a speaker that clinicians are asking for because they really want that continuing ed. All the money within the state association comes from clinicians and goes straight back to clinicians. That's actually really unique because that's not the way any other group runs. That's not the way businesses in our field run. That's not the way, even like things that seemingly feel free, like, you know, Facebook groups, for example, like there's usually one person in charge who can kind of do whatever they want to do. State associations are one of the only situations in which there is nobody at the top. There's nobody at the top who's making all the decisions on your behalf. It's really a community endeavor. But because of that, because it's a community endeavor and because they aren't run as businesses, they're not taking your money and marketing to you, right? So a lot of people have no idea what their state association does because they're not cash rich. You know what I mean? Like when CASHA sits down and has our volunteer meetings all the time, we're not like, dang, what are we going to do with this extra 40 grand that we're sitting on? Let's advertise to clinicians so that we can sell them more stuff. You know, it's one of the only situations in which it's truly run by clinicians for clinicians, and everything is a community endeavor.
Okay. So Meredith, when you were talking about how there's nobody at the top, but then I hear a title that Susie is holding, even though it's a part-time position, it's the executive director. That makes me feel like Susie has those privileges of making executive decisions. So Susie, tell me a little bit about what it's like to hold the office that you hold. Is it an annual cycle? Will somebody else be in it next year? Or do you hold this until a certain period of time? Until death? Like, what's going on, Susie? Until death,
well, maybe till death. I really like it. So basically, I am hired by the board. So I carry out what the board wants me to carry out. So I manage the day-to-day, the really boring stuff like accounting and contracts, writing contracts for speakers and helping to arrange the annual conference and put things together on our website and, you know, do the Zoom meetings like this and things like that. But I'm not the one making the decisions. The board makes the decisions. They give me some leeway to make little decisions like, should I change accountants? Should we change banks? And of course, all of that gets signed off on by the board, but those are like little administrative decisions. Big things like, okay, how are we going to spend this money? How is the budget going to be set up? That comes from the board. The board makes the big decisions and they take input from the members about the direction in which we need to head. The board makes a strategic plan to help us make decisions on a day-to-day basis. I'm just the minion that does what the board wants me to do, and I'm paid to do that.
Yeah.
I think you have a beautiful, beautiful title to be a minion. Like, I wish somebody would call me an executive director and let me do minion work. That's epic. I love that. That's beautiful.
And like, and so to answer your question about like how long I do this work, it's under contract. So I'm under a 3-year contract. So after 3 years, if the board says, we don't really like how she's carrying out her minion work, then we can hire a new minion to do this work.
I bet they're all lining up, aren't they? Pick me. Yeah. That's awesome.
And even like titles that sound cool, like right now I'm the president of CASHA, which sounds like a really big deal and really cool. But realistically, we hold roles for a single year and basically move through roles. And honestly, the board is made up, and this is how most state associations are, the board is just made up of people who are willing to volunteer. It's not some like special thing where you have, like I don't have a disproportionate amount of power within the state association at all. If I was like, oh, I want to do this one thing and everybody else voted it down, like that thing would be off the table.
And then how long are terms on the board?
A year.
So the board is cycling out people every year.
Yeah, the board depends on the term. So if you're if you get elected to president-elect, that's kind of like a three-year term. You spend 1 year as president-elect, 1 year as president, and 1 year as past president. So that is technically a three-year term. But our other board terms, which are or board positions, vice president of speech-language pathology, vice president of audiology, vice president of professional practice, vice president of communications, and vice president of finance, those positions are two-year terms.
Hmm. Okay. All right. And then how do people get on the board? Well, clearly you have to be a member, right?
Yeah. And basically, realistically, what ends up happening is current board members start reaching out to people. And we're like, hey, there's positions open. There's positions open. Who wants to run? Emails get sent out. Social media announcements get made. And we just wait for whoever wants to help, essentially. And more often than not, most state associations don't have enough help. So when they've got all these roles that need to be filled, everything from the board to like who runs the convention each year, like who's, you know, helping recruit speakers and making sure everything happens. Like we've got all these volunteer roles. And most of the time, most state associations don't have enough people. So we just put feelers out there and hope that people will want to help, basically.
Right. Yeah. People can either self-nominate and volunteer to run, or people can nominate others. So if you know of someone who it would be an excellent leader and would do well in this position, you can nominate them and we reach out to them and ask if they would like to run. So, but Meredith's right. Every year, you know, we put out this call for nominations. Who wants to run? It's like crickets. Send out another email. Who wants to run? Crickets. So then it's like, call my friend who I know from graduate school. Hey, would you like to run? So Meredith is absolutely right. It's all about making the ask. And to be totally honest with you, that's how I got involved with Kasha. So I wasn't raising my hand like, hey, I'd like to do this. I literally got a phone call from someone on the board who said, we're going to have a position opening. Someone was moving out of state at the time. And so left their position open in the middle of their term and said, would you just be willing to fill this position until the end of her term? And I said yes to filling someone's one, like the end of their 1 year position. And then I guess I got roped in pretty hard here. So, yeah, but it's really just about asking people to help a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Could you just start a state association like on your own? Just be like, I'm going to start one. Let's do that. If an association is a gathering of people with a common interest.
Yeah. So anybody can start an organization or a group, right? But the state associations also have connections to ASHA, where ASHA supports us. And so there's people on staff at ASHA that provide us with direction and support and guidance when we're trying to deal with things locally. And so mm-hmm. there is a connection between these state associations and ASHA. They aren't like, even though they operate independently and the state association is the boss of what happens within the state association, there's this like light connection to the national organization.
Yeah. And it is a formal process to become a state association of ASHA. And you have to be recognized by ASHA as the state association. So I think it's every 5 years we have to go through the process of becoming re-recognized as the state association. And there's some paperwork and things like that involved. But they also make sure that like our non-discrimination policy aligns with theirs. So there is a not really a heavy big brother sort of thing, but a little bit. I mean, they want to make sure that we're in line with what ASHA's big goals and ASHA's policies are. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if a state association exists and it is recognized by ASHA, but for some insane reason, like they're not doing a very good job at being a state association, and you've collected another gathering of volunteers who are like, we're going to do this right. Could you like edge them out? Like, this question has me like all kinds of sideways.
Yeah. And the reason it's an important question to ask is because SLPs need to and want to know what's in their control. Like audiologists and SLPs need to know what their options are, right? And so you can, in any time you can gather a group of people. But yeah, like Susie said, it's always going to, like, there's going to be an approval process through ASHA that kind of helps a little bit with quality control. It helps ensure that, you know, no state associations are like completely dropping the ball. And if they were completely dropping the ball, they basically would be given the resources to like get things back up and running properly and that type of stuff. And we can also apply for things like grants through ASHA. So state associations can say, hey, there's this thing that we need in our state and, you know, apply to ASHA for funding to support that initiative.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Good.
I will say, though, that some groups, some state associations have split in terms of the audiologists have split off from the state speech language hearing association. Some audiologists feel that their state association really wasn't taking care of audiologists and was really focused only on SLPs. And so they have then broken off and formed a state association for AAA, American Academy of Audiology. So in some states, some professionals, audiologists specifically, have a choice. You can either belong to your state ASHA chapter or your state AAA chapter, or you can choose to belong to both. So it's different in each state. Now, here in Kansas, we don't have a state chapter for AAA. And to be quite honest, I feel like we are better together. SLPs and audiologists are better together. We're sister professions. We're all in it for communication. And really, when you have more numbers, that looks great legislatively. The more people you can gather behind a common cause, the better it is. And so I personally think that we're better together. And Kasia does a really nice job, I feel like, for audiologists and has for as long as I've been part of the association, supporting audiologists in a big way.
Mm. That's excellent. That's really interesting to hear. Thanks for sharing that. At my first job, the office right next to mine was our audiologist. And that was one of the few times like I've been able to work so closely with another audiologist. And it was great because I also treated children at that time. And if there was ever a question about a suspect about why they were experiencing a language delay, he was like, well, bring them right over. We'll do a quick screening. Like, I don't need an order. I don't need to, you know, make this a whole big fiasco. Just bring them right over. And I did not have easy children. it may not have been a fiasco like on the like paperwork side of things, but like it was a fiasco with that child, right? And every time that audiologist like never made an issue of it, was always happy to help and was like on the team, right? So
that's awesome. Yep, audiologists love to be part of the team. And I think a lot of audiologists feel like they're not part of a team. Especially because in a lot of hospitals and a lot of places, they're the only audiologist. So you'll have this huge group of SLPs and one little audiologist, right? So audiologists like to be invited to things and be part of the team.
Oh my gosh, that like speaks to my entire existence like so much, because as an outpatient SLP, we're often the only SLP at that facility. So like I am feeling this to my core. Like, yeah, right. Please invite me to things. I want to be a part.
Right. I know. Like PTs have a little luncheon, OTs have a little luncheon, like a little potluck thing. And then you're kind of an afterthought. Like they open the door like, hey, we're having a lunch. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even bring anything. I wish I would have known. I'll come eat your food, but I didn't bring anything, you know? So including the audiologist, whenever you can, is like, just makes my heart so sad for those lone audiologists that don't get included.
I know, right? Like, don't mind us. We're just airing our insecurities. Like, it's okay.
Exactly.
Love it. Okay. All right. Now I want to dive into like what state associations are for. What are they doing with those dues? You've like touched on it just a little bit, but let's go ahead and dive into that. And let's start with like what a typical mission statement might be. And of course, we'll use Kansas's mission statement as an example.
Okay. All right. So our mission statement is CASHA provides innovative professional development, advocacy, leadership, and networking for current and future speech, language, and hearing professionals to enhance service delivery for those with communication and related disorders. So to break that down, professional development, CEUs. I know a lot of state associations are known for providing CEUs for their folks, and CASHA is no exception. We put on what I think is a bang-up annual conference, and I know that because when we have people from ASHA come to our conference, they say, oh my gosh, you guys have a great, fantastic, high-quality speakers organized conference. And that goes back to our conference planning committee and our board who really make that happen. And then advocacy is a huge one. This is one that no one really thinks about or sees, because when you're doing your day-to-day work in your clinic, you're not thinking to yourself, gee, I wonder what's happening in Topeka today in the legislature. I wonder if maybe they're proposing some kind of bill that could affect my license or could affect reimbursement. I mean, you're not thinking like that. CASHA is doing that work on your behalf. CASHA hires a lobbyist year round. Whether we have a bill that we're trying to get passed or not, we hire a lobbyist to monitor things in the legislature. So, and things happen quickly, very quickly. So I'll get a phone call in the middle of the day from our lobbyist that says, you need to call me back right away. And I'll call and he'll say something like, oh, guess what happened in the Health and Human Services Committee today? They decided to move SLPs from KDADS, which is where our license is now, Kansas Department of Aging and Disability Services. They want to move you under the Board of Healing Arts, like where PTs and OTs and all the other kind of allied professions are. Is that okay with you? And I'm like, no, wait, no, we don't want to do that, because then we're under the same board as physicians. We don't want to be under physicians. We want to have an autonomous scope of practice. We're separate from them. We don't want to be managed by physicians. So then we go to work undoing what just happened in the legislature. And that literally happened like 2-3 years ago. That literally happened. So that's one thing that members of CASHA and other state associations have no idea that that's going on. While you're busy seeing your patients and doing your documentation, we are looking out for your license and your well-being and for the well-being of your income, your reimbursement, and for the clients that you serve. So advocacy is a huge one that... And that's expensive. Paying a lobbyist is expensive. So a lot of dues go to that. If we had a drop-in membership, we couldn't have a lobbyist. That's just all there is to it. So one thing that I tell people, you know, maybe you don't come to our conference, maybe you don't read our newsletters, but by golly, your $70 a year goes to help pay for the lobbyist. So that's a big thing. The other thing that I think that we do really well is networking. And you know, during COVID, networking has been really difficult among members because we're not getting together in person, although we did have one in-person thing in Kansas City a couple weeks ago, and we're going to have another little thing in Wichita, just a little social event. But I can't tell you how many times people have said, oh, yeah, I ran into such and such at the conference, and they told me there was a job opening, and I ended up applying for it. It was my dream job. I had no idea that there was going to be an opening. You know, things like that. Just being in the same room with somebody who either has a position open, has a volunteer position that matches what you need. I think that's incredibly important.
Mm-hmm. And clinicians crave community. They crave that feeling of knowing that there's people around them who can help them answer questions and who they can develop, you know, friendships with and who they can, you know, brainstorm things with and talk things through. But I find it fascinating how people forget that that opportunity exists locally. Like one of the easiest ways to have a really strong network of fellow clinicians actually is locally. And you get the benefit of them being, you know, nearby you so that you only have to drive, you know, so far in order to actually get together for in-person gatherings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I just had an interesting thought because I feel really fortunate to live in a metro area of a very rural state. So with Kansas being exceptionally rural, but we have Kansas City and okay. Also I'm a transplant. So I really don't know like city sizes for the rest of the state. So y'all got to help me out with that. But like how would a state association with the networking and the community building and all of that aspect of it benefit folks who are rural, who are far out?
Yeah. So we actually are continuing out of opportunities and our annual convention shifts from city to city. And we purposely try to move it across the state geographically and also look for concentrations of the highest number of people so that even if in one year you would have had to drive 2 or 3 hours to go to the convention and another year, maybe it's, you know, in your town or, you know, just 30 to 60 minutes away. So we try to shift that stuff around, but also your state association can connect you with people locally. So even if you reach out and you're like, all right, I live in this area of the state, they have everybody's email addresses. They know who everybody is and they can, you know, put you in touch with people. Like just the other day, me and another Kansas person got an email from Susie because there was somebody from out of state moving in and doing some private practice stuff. And they wanted to know about private practice things related to within the state of Kansas. And so your state association can help you make those connections. Even if you reach out and just say, hey, I'm interested in this topic. Do you know of anyone locally who, you know, has expertise in this? I want to start meeting more people who are really into literacy or whatever, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know we recently started keeping a list of providers who are doing work with auditory processing disorder because we get lots and lots of phone calls from both clinicians and from the public saying, hey, who in my area will evaluate my kid for auditory processing disorder? And who does therapy? Who does treatment? So we now keep a list of that. So when clinicians call and say, you know, I'm an SLP, but I don't do this work. Who does this? Who does this close to me? We have that list available. That's just one example. I can think of a million more, but I know when I first got involved with Kasia as a very young clinician, my first or second year in practice, I had a patient with a really nasty looking ABR, which you guys probably know what an ABR is, the hearing test that's the waves and electrophysiological test. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but this is not normal. I don't know what I'm looking at though. I need some help. And I knew I had kind of heard through the grapevine that a clinician named Angie Reeder knew a lot about auditory neuropathy. So I contacted her, never met her before in my life, and just called her out of the blue and said, hey, I have this weird looking ABR and I know you know something about auditory neuropathy. She says, yeah, hey, mark their name out and fax it to me. Let me see it. So she did. And we had this beautiful conversation about what exactly I was looking at and seeing. And then she said, hey, you know what? Let me send you a couple articles about management because you're right. This is auditory neuropathy. And this is how I know by looking at your waveforms. This is how I know it's auditory neuropathy. And this is best practice now because we didn't learn about that much in school because it was so new. She said, let me send you this Buffalo model. Let me send you this. Let me send you this. Let me send you that. And so I get all these emails about with all these links to the research so I could read it myself. And so that kind of networking would never happen if I weren't part of the state association. That's how I got a hold of her.
I'm starting to realize that networking is a form of mentorship and menteeship as well, because there was a lot of learning transferring going on there, a lot of professional support happening. And that is so cool. That is one of my favorite things about SLPs and audiologists is that, like, oh my gosh, we are so nerdy. And we're like, oh, let me tell you all the things I love about this particular niche area in our field that, like, I have just totally fallen in love with. Like, oh, you asked me about it? I'm going to take the next 5 hours of your life. Like,
And I needed it. It's oh so my nice. Gosh, I so needed it. And it was so nice of her to spend her own time. I mean, she got nothing out of that other than nerding out for a little bit with me, you know?
Which is so rewarding, like, because we don't, like, get this knowledge and fine-tune it to hoard it. Like, it does us some good in the practice that we have, but we also know it could benefit so many more patients if so many more other clinicians had this knowledge, had access to it, and could use it with their patients, too. I think that's something we all recognize at a certain level. Like, once we learn these things, we don't want to be like, well, I took this great CEU, but I'm not going to tell any other SLPs I work with about it because it's just going to make me look good. Like, no, like, we're like, hey, you guys, I just learned this crazy, awesome thing. Do you want me to tell you about it? Like, yeah. We can't help ourselves.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's how it should be. You know, I think about what my mom always said as a kid, you know, sometimes really, really, really smart people are not very good communicators. And I remember her saying multiple times, she said, you know, it's great to be smart. It's great to know a lot about a lot of things or know a lot about one thing. But if you can't communicate that to anyone, it's worthless. Your knowledge is basically useless. If you can't communicate that in a way that other people can understand it, your smarts are worthless.
Yeah.
Which is why I have other smart people on this podcast to share those things. Share your knowledge, friends. Share your knowledge. Okay, what are some other wonderful things about state associations? Why do they exist and why do they benefit the members?
I think one of the simplest ways to describe it is like disaster prevention. Like, and Susie can kind of walk through some of the, you know, disaster prevention things that our state has participated in over the last handful of years, where, like, if Kasia wasn't involved, something bad could have happened.
Yeah, sure. So and I've only been in this role since 2016. So that's only, 5 years of disaster prevention. But a couple of things have come up that Kasia needed to get involved with. And the first one that I got involved with was in 2016, that very first year. Lead K is an organization that promotes language acquisition and language development for children who have hearing loss, specifically deaf kids. And Lead K was putting, basically in every state, putting forth some legislation that was really pushing ASL specifically and making sure that all children had access to visual communication, specifically ASL. And Kasia got involved because Kasia knows that deaf kids can benefit from multiple modalities and multiple ways of obtaining language. So we worked with Lead K when that legislation first was put forth to include other modes of communication. So we include listening and spoken language, as well as other visual communication systems like signing exact English. So that was a really, really successful collaboration, I feel like. And it actually resulted in a really, really beautiful program, LAP, Language Assessment Program, which has really been shining a bright light on our deaf and hard of hearing kids and where their gaps are in language. We didn't really have state-level data like that at the time, and so that program has begun and is managed actually through KSD, the Kansas School for the Deaf. But that program is a really, really beautiful example of what came out of what could have been some very contentious legislation, and it could have been really ugly. And Chris Pedersen and I sat down with the folks who were putting together the Lead K legislation and worked that out. So that was really good work that the state association did. The other big thing that I think is a huge win was in 2018, Kansas was working on a telemedicine act to be able to have teletherapy. Well, really, it was really for physicians at the time. And lots of other professions tried to kind of piggyback on this legislation. Everybody from chiropractors to nutritionists and all kinds of interesting things that you would think, okay, really, how are you going to do chiropractor work through telemedicine? Give me some examples of that. So I know I learned a lot. Actually, it really came down to their nutrition. They were doing some nutrition counseling through their chiropractic practice. And so they wanted to be able to do that via telemedicine. So we worked with our lobbyists to try to get added to that. And it was not looking good. The person who at that time was the chair was like, no, we can't add all these other people on because then the insurance companies will fight really hard against it. We can't add all these other professions on. Well, we ended up kind of partnering with two legislators who really value the work that SLPs do and ended up getting added as an amendment to the bill. And we were the only professions who were added. So it covers physicians, mental health providers, and then we got added as an afterthought kind of for SLPs and audiologists with the caveat that was only for Medicaid recipients. Well, anybody can receive telemedicine services, but for billing purposes, Medicaid were the only ones who were required to pay for it at that time for SLPs and audiologists. So getting added to that was huge. That was huge. The advocacy work that our members did and that our lobbyists did was huge. That wouldn't have happened if we didn't have a state association. Mm-hmm. And then I had mentioned too about how our licensing board, we almost got moved under Board of Healing Arts, which would not be a positive move for us, just in terms of autonomy of the professions. So those are things that the state association does kind of under the radar. I mean, we send out emails and ask people to send letters of support, but I think people are so busy with their clinical work that they don't read all those details. And I totally get that. But a select few members sending out emails, making phone calls, going to the Capitol to testify just made all the difference in the world.
That's amazing.
And I think it's important to keep in mind too, like as people are reflecting on, you know, what should I do? Do I want to get involved? You know, that, you know, SLPs and audiologists have a lot of things they have to pay money toward, right? And it's completely reasonable that you can't pay for all the things all the time, even if you wish you could and wanted to be. But keep in mind that there's like the dues is a way to contribute to the efforts, but also the volunteering is a way to contribute to the efforts. So that, you know, paying attention to calls for contacting legislators and, you know, volunteering for your state association if they have a call for something that they need labor put toward. So if you can think in terms of, you know, time and or money and identify like little ways in which you can, you know, have like a little bit of something to give that can make a huge difference for the state association.
So do you send your emails out to non-members? Like, do you just have a general email list that you might do a blast about legislation that includes people who are not due-paying members to your state association?
Good question. So most of the small emails go just to the membership. Now, ASHA does allow us to send advocacy emails to all ASHA members who are in Kansas. So that would include people who are ASHA certified, but not necessarily belong to the state association. And we get so many of those a year. Actually, I think if you're talking about advocacy, you can send as many of those as you want through ASHA. You just have to send all this stuff to ASHA. So yeah, so that kind of stuff, yes. But things like about our annual conference and things like that generally go just to the members.
Okay. All right. Because I was wondering, like, is there a way to volunteer your time without being a dues-paying member of the state association? Because I see what you're saying. Like, you know, sometimes you don't have the money, but you might have the time. But I'm kind of wondering, like, how can you volunteer for an organization that you're not really a member of?
We have some members that go on and off membership where they'll like pay, not pay. And a lot of those people are still getting advocacy related emails and stuff like that, even in years when they're not paying because they previously have been a member. So they're kind of on our list of people who, you know.
Okay.
Right. And you know what? If somebody wanted to volunteer and they couldn't afford the $70, I'm sure we would take their time. We would, we would figure out a place and a position for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes me think of students because, right, I'm always like free labor. And they're probably like, no, Leanne, stop. We're not free labor. Like, get that out of your head right now. But like, how do you interact with the universities in this state? How do you get them to know about the association? So if they do stay in state to practice, that they would make a good decision by joining the association. Like, how do you reach them?
Yeah, great question. So either I, myself, or someone else from the board goes to the four universities. We have four programs in Kansas, usually in the fall, and make a campus visit. And we pop in on a graduate class and talk to them about CASHA, kind of a, this is what CASHA is and does, kind of like what this podcast is about. This is why you should join. And then we usually give them a discounted rate to join. If you join, you know, in the next 30 days, it's half price dues for your first year. And then we ask students to join because there are some opportunities that they can participate in as a student member. They can apply for scholarships through CASHA by presenting a poster at the annual conference. They can also apply to be a student representative on our board. We have one position as a student rep on our board. They also can get what we call CASHA's gift to the grad. So if students are members of CASHA for the two consecutive years before they graduate, they get some perks, like they get to attend the conference. The first year that they attend the conference, they get to attend at the student rate, which is much, much cheaper than attending as a professional. So, and they get a discount on the dues for their first year. So those are some of the benefits, but also we encourage them to come to the conference and volunteer because one, they can network with other students, but also network with professionals. And of course, getting all the CEUs they want by attending the conference. So those are a few ways. And then the other big thing that we do is at the conference, we have started a Praxis Bowl, which is super fun. If you get a chance to go to the conference, it's probably my favorite part of the conference. Usually it's on Thursday evening, and each university sends four people and one alternate to participate in a kind of academic bowl to practice questions for the Praxis. So at the end of the bowl, one university wins and they get to take home this big cup. It's called the Prairie Cup Praxis Bowl. So they get to take home this big trophy cup thing, and it has their university engraved at the bottom. And, you know, it's kind of like this traveling trophy. So that's a few ways that we engage students. But I really think that engaging students is super important because if you get them as members and you show them how important it is to be members as students, they're more likely to join and keep up their membership as clinicians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Part of me wishes that, you know, that the ability to like go visit a graduate student class and have like a captive audience for, you know, like at least a solid 20 minutes or whatever. I wish there was a way to tap into clinicians that way. I would tap into the about year 5 to 8 clinician, because that's the point in time where they really understand how everything works. They're comfortable in their skin. They get what's going on. They're not in survival mode anymore. Instead, they're kind of at that phase of their career where they're like, huh, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm really getting the most out of this as I can, and, you know, doing things right and participating and, you know, doing advocacy work and networking and all that stuff. Like, I wish there was like a captive way that we could,
right,
you know, get clinicians at about that point in time too.
Happy hour.
Yeah.
Tasha sponsored happy hour.
That's right. Ooh, that'd be so good.
Yeah, we had a happy hour here in Kansas City just the other week. We didn't really talk all that much about Kasha, but we talked about the field the whole time, which was fun.
That's awesome. Meredith and Susie, this was wonderful. I've learned so much about the state association that I just joined this year. Finally. Yay! And I hope this has helped people understand what their state associations are doing, how they're structured, and what their purpose is. Because they all have little differences here and there, and it also depends on how large their state is, so how many members they have. They probably operate a little bit differently based on that as well. But you get an idea of what they're doing and how they're helping you, and that if you're looking for a place to connect, to volunteer, to have an impact, look to your state association.
Yes.
And if you want to join a community, do some networking, do some mentee or mentorship, look to your state association.
Absolutely.
And the one thing I want to make sure that clinicians know too is the state association is there for you, and it's run by your fellow clinicians. So if you feel like there's something that you want your state association to be doing that they wish you wish they would be offering to you, honestly, just reach out to them. Reach out to them and say, hey, could you figure out a way to set up this type of networking opportunity? Or, hey, you know, we in this city really are wanting continuing ed on this topic. Can you see if you can, you know, get it on the slate for this upcoming year for us or something? We don't hear enough from clinicians without us having to go out and ask them. Mm-hmm. But your state association is hungry to know what you want them to do for you. So just tell them, like, that's their job. Their job is to do the stuff that you want them to do. So just reach out and tell them.
Awesome. Very good. All right. That was wonderful. Thank you both so much for this really informative talk. I really enjoyed it. I think it's been really helpful and enlightening. And yeah, I hope people get energized by it and look to find ways to connect and engage and contribute to our field, because it is super important work. Like, yeah, I don't want to think about the state of my license and when it comes under fire. I don't want to think about how different types of legislation affect our reimbursement. I'm really glad that you guys do. Thank you.
Yeah, I think your sentiment is probably pretty widely held. You know, people are just not interested in government. If you were interested in government, you'd be in politics, right? So, right. You know, you want to focus on your work and best practice and the clients that you see. You don't want to worry about the boring stuff. And that's what your state association is doing for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks again, ladies.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Speech Uncensored podcast. I just want to thank my awesome guests this week, Meredith and Susie, for coming on and sharing the inner workings of state associations. I really enjoyed learning how they're structured, what their purpose is, and how necessary they are to protect our profession. And I understand now that for state associations to truly improve SLPs' professional lives, SLPs have to be involved. And for them to be truly effective, they need input from their members. So join and get involved. And then write me and tell me all the amazing things that are getting accomplished. I'd love that. So you can check out the show notes on speechuncensored.com for links to more information on the Interstate Compact and the discussion guide for today's episode. I'd be honored if you could post a thoughtful review on Apple Podcasts so other SLPs can find the podcast and join us in this journey. And I'd like to send a big thanks to Laura Miller for her terrific audio editing skills. And I'm so glad that you've decided to spend some of your time with the Speech Uncensored podcast. And I hope that the material that we've covered has nourished your mind so that your practice can flourish. Now get out there and be awesome.